Welcome, everybody, to the special Making Time and Space for Love event. My name's Arielle Ford, and today we're going to be talking about how to reduce stress and overwhelm to raise your love vibration. And if you're feeling too busy to focus on your love life, if you're out of time or burned out, we're going to give you some solutions for that. And first, let me tell you about our expert panelists today. First, we have with us Dr. Joan Borsenko. She is one of the world's leading experts on stress, spirituality, and the mind-body connection. She has a doctorate in medical sciences from Harvard Medical School, and she is a licensed clinical psychologist and the co-founder and former director of the mind-body clinical programs at the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, Harvard Medical School. Her most recent book, which I read and loved, is called Fried, Why You Burn Out and How to Revive, which offers a completely fresh approach to burnout. Our next panelist is Victoria Moran. She is a motivational speaker, holistic lifestyle coach, corporate spokesperson, and the Oprah-featured author of many books, including the best-selling Creating a Charmed Life. She blogs for the Huffington Post. She is the host of Veg in the City on HealthyLife.net radio. And she is a married mother of a young actress who is living a charmed life in New York City. And finally, we have Christina Rilo, who is an internationally recognized inspirational catalyst and self-love expert who shares her fresh, daring, yet practical truths on how to stop running yourself ragged and being so hard on yourself. I'm sure nobody can relate to that. She is a recovering achievement junkie and doing addict, and she's the co-founder of the Inner Mean Girl Reform School, where women go to transform their negative self-talk into self-love. She's also the popular author of the go-to guide on love, Choosing Me Before We. And she is the founder of the International Day of Self-Love, Madly in Love with Me Day, on February 13th. So ladies, welcome to the call.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Let's talk about love.
Let's do it. So I want to start with having each of you share with us a story about a time in your life when you were too busy for love, what happened and how you changed it. And Christine, I know you've got a story. Why don't you begin?
I do, actually, as recent as of yesterday, because it's true, I am a recovering achievement junkie, which means that this is, you know, still something that shows up for me. And I am married to what I call walking love. He's an amazing, amazing man. And when I wrote my first book, Choosing Me Before We, I so loved writing and so loved doing what I was doing that I kind of forgot that Noah, is my husband's name, existed. He called himself the book widow. And I would come out for dinner. I would come out for breakfast, but I just didn't really have a lot of time to spend with him because I was so immersed in my book. And I'm currently up in wine country in California right now writing my second book. And he just came up last night to visit, and I was just like, I was just so loving everything. And I just said to myself, you know, I'm going to do this differently, and I'm going to involve him in what I'm doing because I love this man, and I married this man, and yes, I love this book, but this I love him more. And so what I've been doing is really involving him in my process, and then really setting things down. And like last night, we went out to dinner, and we went to play, we went wine tasting, and this morning, instead of getting on the computer, I went to the store with him, I made breakfast with him, and just really created that space and involved him in what I was doing. So it's kind of both of those things, and I think for me, it's a constant awareness of making space for love and to let myself be filled up with that as well as love him and give him what he needs too.
Great story. And Joan, will you share a story of before you found your soulmate, Gordy, how you were too busy for love?
Yeah, I will. I was, let's see. I was an instructor in medicine at Harvard Medical School, and I was running a mind-body clinic at one of the big Boston hospitals and seeing people with AIDS, with cancer, with stress-related disorders early in the AIDS epidemic. I spent a lot of nights and weekends by deathbeds. At that time, I had two sons. Let's see, the guys must have been one of them. Yeah, they were preteen and teenagers, and I had an hour commute from Harvard to our home. I had no time at all. And I think what happens with women, and there's research on this, it's also my story, you talk about what your priorities are as a working mother, and everybody says kids first. Well, it turns out work comes first because you don't want to get fired. Kids are second. If you're married, that spouse, the relationship with the spouse is a distant third. And that's what it was in our house. And I think we paid dearly for that eventually with the breakdown of the marriage and a breakup. And I did really learn that you can't snuggle up to your work at night. And unless you want to be married to it, you have to do it differently. And what I would say now, having been with my soulmate for 8 years and married for 6 of those, is that I've completely changed my priorities and that time with Gordy comes first. And I say no to a lot of work things because I understand how I feel in my body, how I feel in my soul, and how if you're going to say that love is the most important thing, actually it's helpful to live that.
Yeah, I completely agree. And Victoria, what story can you share with us?
One story is how I lost a guy. Now, I am with the right guy, so this is not an awful tragedy, but at the time it seemed like that for this very reason. We had been together for 7 years, and we didn't live together. We lived around the corner, and I was coming out to the East Coast from the Midwest. He was here, and he said, "Can you just go into my house and get me this particular pair of shoes?" So I was working on a book, and my daughter was young teen, and everything was pressing. So I finally got over to his place to pick up the shoes the morning that I was flying out to New York. And they weren't where he'd said they were. I looked all over. I couldn't find them. I called him and said, "I'm here to get your shoes. Where are they?" And there was silence on the other end of the line. And he said, "You mean you waited till the morning of the flight?" And I said, "Well, yeah, because I'm busy." And he said, "You know, I understand that you put Adair, my daughter, first, but I don't like it that you put everything else first." And I said, yeah, I don't really. It just seems like that. Wear the shoes. The guy is out here honking. When I got to New York City, he was not at the airport, and he owned a limo company.
Oh, God.
And when he was not at the airport, I knew that that was the end of it. Now, the good end of it is he found his true soulmate, as did I, but the lesson was to do it differently this time. And the sweetest thing, the former boyfriend sent us a wedding card with a little note to my current husband saying, "Victoria is fabulous, but watch out whenever she's writing a book." So now I watch out when I'm writing a book so that I have time for my honey.
Right, and all four of us write books, so I'm sure we can relate to that. I was wondering, do any of you have any research or statistics about the importance of having me time that you can share?
Well, I'll jump in as a queen of self-love and a recovering achievement junkie. I am really committed to me time. And one of the things that I've found in my research is that there's 4 out of 5 women are so exhausted and have just taxed their bodies and their minds and their spirit to such a degree that they're either in adrenal burnout or they're on their way to adrenal burnout, which basically means that you're just taxing your system, that you're in what's called fight or flight mode all the time. And we think that, why are we so tired? Well, we're so tired and we're so exhausted and we have insomnia and we are gaining weight. All these symptoms of what adrenal gland fatigue actually is because of the stress and because of the overwhelm. And we don't attribute it to those things of not actually taking me time. And I know for myself, and I think this is true for a lot of women, is that we have been trained for really centuries to believe that if we give and 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 give, that that's just how it's supposed to be. That giving to ourselves, we somehow feel guilty. So I think that's why there's this deeply ingrained cellular belief patterning inside of us that drives us to this kind of exhaustion, because I don't think any of us want to be exhausted. But if 4 out of 5 of us, you know, are on the verge of that or in that place, that means that, you know, any one of us on the phone or anyone listening right now, you know, think of you or your girlfriends, we could be there. I certainly could have went there yesterday. So it's a constant vigilance to really listen to my body and know what she needs and to take care of her and not get that it's pampering, but it's really self-sustainability.
Yeah, I've certainly found I've got a massage scheduled here at the house every 2 weeks, and I think of it as preventative medicine. You know, it's actually, I mean, it feels great. I look forward to it, but I also know that I stay healthier because that's something that is just non-negotiable, have to have it kind of thing. Joan, this is really one of your areas of expertise. You know, what's the importance of me?
Yeah. You know, it's a really interesting question because I bet there actually are some studies out there specifically about me time. And I realized I ought to search the literature because I don't know them. Other than this one statistic, you know, there was a psychologist at Yale, Daniel Levitson, who wrote about women's lives. And when I talked before about the statistic that if you ask working mothers what their first priority is, they'll say the kids, but in fact, work is co-equal or even more important in turn, and that if they have a husband, he's third. What trails last and very last is time with women friends, because for a lot of women, that is me time. And women, you know, men and women have a very different response to stress. Men have more of a fight or flight response. And what the literature shows is that women have a response called tend and befriend. Anything that allows us to really bond and be with other women particularly releases oxytocin, and it's what keeps the stress level down. So when we're busy, that tends not to happen. And then all other pursuits that you might think of as me time aren't even on the list for many busy women. And so, you know, as somebody who spent most of her life as an academic looking at the stress response, I would say that life is stressful anyhow. When we're burned out, we go actually beyond stress. The whole physiology of stress changes. And what we end up with is such a possibility not only of getting sick, but worse yet, we move into soul sickness when we can't enjoy life, we can't enjoy time, and that's absolutely the worst of it. But putting yourself first on your own list, you know, I agree with Christina. This is endemic to women of our culture. We just, you know, if somebody else needs time, we give it away. So mostly I think it's a matter of understanding that and learning how to say no.
And Victoria, what do you have to say about me time?
Well, I have to say that if I don't take my me time, then the we time is not so hot. And this is hard because I think sometimes women particularly, I certainly know I do, have this feeling, okay, I need to do this thing he wants to do. And my husband works really hard all day long, and his way to wind down at night is to watch television. And I don't like watching television. It kind of erodes my soul. But I feel like if I'm not in there with him doing that on the nights that we don't go out, that I'm somehow neglecting him. But now I've finally got it. I have a 60-minute television limit. I can do that much with him. And then I need to be doing the things that I need to be doing in the evening, like reading and doing some yoga before bed and just getting everything kind of straightened up for the day so that when I wake up the next morning, there's not a backlog left over. And it makes the relationship so much better because instead of feeling like, okay, I have to watch another television show with him because I need to be in the room with him, I'm in the apartment with him putting out good vibes instead of those, this is a chore kind of energy. It helps.
Great. And, you know, Joan, with your most recent book, Fried, what can you suggest to help those who are listening that are burned out or stressed out, how to turn the cycle around?
So the first thing is awareness, because what I've noticed is people joke around. They say, oh, I'm so fried. But when you're not aware of what fried looks like and how it makes it impossible, really, to love yourself or love anybody else, then you kind of keep on keeping on because you're in such a negative loop and cycle anyhow that busyness puts you in. So one of the things that I think is so important is to understand that being fried starts with overwork. That's part of it. And then self-care just goes down the drain. That's kind of the next aspect. And your me time disappears and you're not doing what you need for yourself. Then what happens is your priorities shift. And, you know, if you had somebody that you love a lot, they're no longer the priority that they used to be. And what happens next is the most difficult. And that is, as you look down, there are about 12 stages of burnout that have been very well researched over the last 30 years. When you start to get to the stage of, ugh, I'm cynical, what matters, what do I care, why bother, what happens is that you start to get snarky toward the people that you love. And that's because you're snarky inwardly to yourself at that point. And you're so emotionally exhausted and physically depleted that the empathy circuits in the frontal lobe begin to go offline. And your emotional intelligence drops away and your social intelligence drops away and your pleasure in life drops away. You know, I like to think, my God, it's like the world has been covered with saran wrap. And there's all this good and beautiful, beautiful, beautiful things, pleasure and care and kindness, and you can no longer connect with them. And that's when burnout really turns into soul sickness. And it goes downhill quickly from there because physical symptoms set in, you know, the kind of things we think of as stress-related symptoms. But that's, too, when depression begins to set in. And so the only real hope for this is beginning to recognize when you're burned out that you can't just keep like, oh, I'm tired, I'm emotionally exhausted, I'm physically depleted, I can't sleep, but I'll get through this, because you won't actually. It's a naturally progressive disorder and you've got to nip it in the bud. Otherwise, you're really in spiritual crisis.
So when people are in that point, give a couple of steps you can share on what's the next step to take. You become aware that you're fried and burned out. Now what?
Well, you know, here's the thing. There's no, like, magic formula that's going to work for everybody. So the first thing you need to do is really to take a step back and look at your life. You know, we have a capacity as human beings for self-reflection. And that's part of what goes on in our prefrontal lobes, too, is that capacity to look at, witness, notice what our process is, what our thinking is, without mistaking it for who we actually are. And if you take some time to reflect, you know, I tell people, just go off to a spa or a retreat center. If you don't have any money, the great thing about the Catholic Church is that they've got all of these, you know, wonderful kinds of, you know, nunneries, really, where you can go and rent a room and be by yourself for a few days for very little money. And you need to really reflect and say, is this the life that I want to be living? And if not, you've got to say, what is it that drives me to do this? What's the truth? And to really come face to face with yourself and to look at where it is that you've started to take the wrong direction in life, because that's what it is. You're on the wrong track. If you let your life be consumed by your work, it really becomes so terribly painful. So self-reflection is the first step. And I think because burnout is really a disorder of the energy body, we're just letting ourselves constantly be drained and there's not enough replenishing going on, is that you need to reflect on what it is in your life that's really draining you and what is it that replenishes you, and come back from your time of reflection with a step in either direction. And so just for example, quickly, I can tell you that one of my biggest dreams is doing favors for other people, because I so appreciate the opportunity to have been able to write 15 books. And I love that people would reach out to me. But on the other hand, sometimes 10 manuscripts arrive in a single week. And just answering people about, can you look at my manuscript? Can you look at my manuscript? I finally realized the answer is no. I can look at almost no manuscripts, or there goes my exercise time, or there goes my time with Gordy, or there goes my me time. And so you have to learn how to make really firm boundaries and cut off those things that drain you. And then you have to look, what really is it that revives me? And I know for me, Ariel, that the chief way that I revive is nature. I need my nature time. And I actually have to put that on my calendar, because if I don't, then at the end of the day, I'm waiting like, well, I thought I would have an hour here or an hour there, and I end up not having done it at all. So you also have to hold yourself accountable. And now I'll say one last word and then be quiet. So it's so good to have a partner in this, because it's very hard to break out of ruts alone. And so if you have a friend, or if you have a spiritual director, or if you have a coach, or if you have a beloved, the idea is to say, this is the plan, and it's just a start. But to have somebody who'll hold you accountable to it, who'll say, well, gee, if you were supposed to, like, in your mind, go out and take a walk every day, you've only been out once this week. What's happening? And that allows you to stay on track.
Yeah, I love that. I actually have one friend who is a workaholic, and so we've set up negative consequences if she doesn't take vacation days a year. So for every vacation day she misses, she has to donate $500 to the charity of my choice.
Oh, that's very cool.
That's good.
Wow,
you're a good friend to have.
Bargain, girlfriend.
Yeah, well, you only have to get somebody to write the check once, and they realize it's in their best interest to keep their agreements. Victoria, what do you say to people who are dealing with stress and burnout?
Well, one of the things that's so simple is we're just not resting enough. We're supposed to be sleeping 9 to 10 hours a night, and we don't really know how much ancient people slept, but based on looking at people who go camping and how much people sleep who don't have electric light bulbs and how much people sleep in parts of the world where they don't have electricity, we really need to be getting a lot more than we are, because once you're rest and relaxed and refreshed, you can make decisions. And one decision that you might need to make if you're burned out is to take a huge leap of faith and change the burning out situation. So often people say, certainly I hear it from my clients, I can't change it. This is my job. This is my company. This is my business. This is the way we've always done things. But you know what? If you're burned out, if this is affecting your life adversely, you might be able to change what you absolutely believe is unchangeable. And then finally, if you're really feeling this, oh my gosh, I don't want to get up in the morning, I don't want to look at this day, I think we need to look at where our lives reflect us, because it's so easy to get off the track and start living somebody else's life. We're trying to have the success that society tells us we're supposed to have. We're supposed to have this wonderful, clean, neat, tidy, beautifully decorated home. And if having a beautifully decorated home makes your soul sing, then you need one of those. But if you just don't really care, but you're trying to do that because somebody else cares, that's going to burn you out quicker than if you lit a match to it. So you want to ask yourself every day, okay, does this reflect me? Is this my life reflecting myself back to me, or am I just becoming a really good actress? And if that's what you are, then go audition for something. Don't do it in your real life.
Great. And Christine?
Well, I think for me, and this is a kind of tying a little bit in what Joan said, is that I had to get really clear about what was driving me. And that would be something that I would really encourage people when they do that self-reflection, which you actually have to do to change the things that we're talking about. It's not like any of us don't want to take care of ourselves. It's not that any of us want to be workaholics. It's not that any of us want to be exhausted. But then why is it that we set goals or we set intentions and then we don't meet them over and over and over again? And I think it really comes down to what's the underlying fear underneath all of that that's actually running you or driving you. And I know for me, it's when I got really face to face, or as I like to call it, got naked with my fear and really looked at, you know, what is it that keeps me driving this way or keeps me pushing, you know, love away. There was some real fears there. There is the fear of being vulnerable. I mean, truthfully, it's just easier for me to work than it is to let myself be vulnerable. And my 10-year marriage with Noah has been a constant source of me building my vulnerability muscles, or what I call my love quotient, my ability and capacity to receive love. And I had to learn how to put my faith and trust into spirit, in the universe, that it could actually get more done than I could. And I found a whole slew of what I call inner mean girls inside of me, my achievement junkie, my comparison queen, all based on driving me and motivating me from fear, because they were afraid that I was never going to get there, or the fear that I wasn't going to be enough. And this is like deep, you know, these are deep fears that I didn't even know I had. So what I would really suggest to people is, yeah, take that reflection time, get that space, and then really, you know, be with yourself and sit with yourself and get under what's that fear that's driving you. What's that pattern that's being driven by fear that's safer for you, really, than letting yourself be loved.
Yeah, you raise a really good point, because everybody who's listening to this call is single. You know, they're in the process of manifesting love. They want love. And yet many of them are in this space, well, I'm too busy. How do I make time for love? So, you know, for some people, it may be confronting the fact that there's fear around. Well, what if that love comes? But, you know, I'd love you all to jump in and just share some of your ideas on how to begin today to prioritize love and make time for love.
Well, I'll jump in, and I would say that, and I know this to be true because it's where it started for me, is that the love that you're looking for on the outside starts with the love that you have on the inside. And so the first thing that I would encourage and invite everyone to do who's listening to this call is to make a commitment to yourself to fall madly in love with you. And that's, how do you do that? Well, you start with the awareness that loving yourself, just like you would want to love this person who you're trying to bring into your life, you have to love yourself like that. You have to have compassion for yourself, respect for yourself, treat yourself with care, you know, be compassionate with yourself. And one small thing that you can do every morning, because I really do believe love is a vibration, and the more vibration we have inside of our hearts, the more it will come to us, is every morning I do something. I've been doing this for over 10 years. It's called self-love soak. And what you do is in the morning, you open your eyes, right? First thing you get up, you open your eyes. Do not jump out of bed. Actually, close your eyes. And say to yourself over and over again till you can feel it, I love you, Christine. I love you, Ariel. I love you, Joan. I love you, Victoria, whatever your name is. And say it over and over again for like 3 minutes. And let your heart open to feel that vibration of love and really soak that love in for yourself. And at first it will feel a little weird and wonky, but self-love is a weird and wonky, daring kind of thing. And trust me, over time, what will happen is that your heart will open more to love, which is really, the number one thing that has to happen to invite love into your life.
Well, that's beautiful. One of the things that I talk with people about is making their lives romantic. Cosmo did a study last year, and only 23% of the women said that their lives were romantic enough. And so often we're sitting around waiting for somebody else to leave roses at the door when our own lives are just romance void. And you don't have to be in a relationship to have that. So think about what's romantic to you. It's a lot more romantic to go to a cute little cafe with some chairs outside and have your cup of coffee than to just go through the drive-thru at McDonald's, even though McDonald's is supposed to have fabulous coffee. If you want romance in your life, it's about more than the coffee. It's about that ambiance. Another thing is to look in your lingerie drawer. And just because I'm named Victoria, I don't have anything to do with the lingerie people. I wish I did. But if there's stuff in there that's stretched out, that's got holes in it, that you wouldn't want to be wearing for your first night with Mr. Oh my gosh, he's so very right, you don't want to be wearing it with yourself. And we talk about law of attraction. You want to be attracting through every aspect of your cellular being, how you see yourself and what you're putting out into the world. So treat yourself like somebody worthy. Buy those roses for yourself. I used to have a plan before I met William that I call Friday flowers. And every day I would buy myself flowers because I deserved having fresh flowers. And you know, after that, it didn't take him very long to show up.
I did the same thing. The other thing that I did that was, you know, I did get married till I was 44, and I had this thought in my head when I was younger, oh, I'll get the nice towels and the nice sheets and the nice kitchen stuff when I register for my wedding, right? But it didn't come, and I actually was always using hand-me-down towels because my mother likes to get new towels every year, so she'd ship me her old towels. And finally, I thought, you know what, why don't I buy the towels I really want? Why don't I buy the linen napkins I really want to use? So I started doing the same thing. Every Friday after work, I'd buy myself flowers. I started, instead of just eating over the sink, I started to set the table for myself and light a candle and use pretty, you know, pretty stuff and make my life more romantic. So that's a really, really great point. Any other tips you want to share on this?
Well, I think the biggest one, because I have seen this time and time and time again in relationships, is whenever somebody says, you know what, I'm enough, that is when the true love seems to come into the life. And one of the ways that this happens, and this is pretty grand and not something that's possible for everybody, is if somebody buys property. This happens for women. It happens for men. They just finally say, you know what, I may be single, so I'm going to buy a condo. I'm going to buy a house. Within days, the first time I saw this, I was 19 years old. I was working in an advertising agency in Kansas City, and one of my coworkers, lovely woman, but she was about 30, and at that time, that was like way old, to not be married, and she just said, you know what? I'm buying a place. And it was the real estate guy that she ended up marrying. So I started watching this, and over the years, whatever you can do, it's not necessarily buying property, but that is just a huge thing that says to the universe, you know what? I'm fine the way I am. I'm whole. And when you're whole, instead of being half and trying to attract the other half, oh my gosh, being whole attracts great people.
Well, and that's self-love. I mean, that really is choosing me before we. And I know that for me, and I think so many people and women that I meet, is that it's the Jerry Maguire's fault. When he said, you know, he walked into that when Tom Cruise walks into the room with Renee Zellweger, and, you know, he's like, you complete me. I'm like, no, no, that we have to complete ourselves. And just like you're saying, to be whole with ourselves and to believe that we're enough and that self-love really fills us up. Because what happens otherwise is we go out and we find relationships to stick into the holes inside of us. And that's when you end up with codependency and wrong relationships that you I can't leave this relationship, else I'll die or whatever, and then you're blocking love again. And so I really do believe that self-love and loving yourself is the key to getting to the place where you can have that relationship that you're looking for. And the other component of self-love that I just want to invite everyone into is to take this vow with yourself. It's the vow of I only have loving relationships. And so that means looking at all the relationships in your life, not just, you know, your romantic partner, but look at every single relationship in your life and ask yourself, is this a loving relationship? Is this a relationship that creates more love, that helps me become a better person, that generates love? And if it's generating something else, you need to either change and transform that relationship, or you need to move the relationship out because it's blocking love from coming into your life in other ways.
I love that. And, you know, one of the things I still want to look at is, especially for single people, is how do we make love a priority in our life? So one of the ways I suggest to people is that they start blocking out time in their calendar for dates. And, you know, because let's say you're so busy that you actually, somebody wants to ask you on a date and you look at your calendar, you don't have time for 3 weeks. I say start making that time now.
And when the time shows up and you don't have a date, make that me time or take yourself out on a date. And I was wondering what other tips or solutions any of you have to share along those lines.
I love dating yourself. I can remember the first time I took myself out to dinner, I was so freaked out. I thought people were going to be like, oh my God, look at that lonely girl over there dating all by herself. And it was so fun to go out with myself, and I treated myself just like I would, you know, a day. I would get dressed up. I'd get myself flowers. I'd ask myself questions. Oh, do you like this? Do you like that? One of the things, and I still do this today, is I go out and I take little field trips of collecting evidence that love exists. And so I go out and I'll go for a walk, or I'll go to the coffee shop, and I just look for love, whether it's like looking for love and seeing it in somebody else, or it's smiling at the barista, or it's stopping to smell a flower, and just really going out and collecting evidence that love actually exists. And there's something about that that becomes a love generator, that starts to generate love inside of you and open you up to really see it, so that when it does come walking in your life, you're not too busy. You're like, oh, look, this is love. I'm going to clear space for this.
I love that. It actually reminded me of one of my favorite lines from A Course in Miracles, which is, the only thing that can be lacking in any situation is that which you are not giving. So when you're in that space of there's not enough love, the only thing to do is to give more love.
One of the things that I like to tell single people is just to get out in the world. I love the phrase, get up, get dressed, get going. Because when you're out there in the world, not only are you going to be where the love is, you're going to be where God is. You know, it's wonderful to know that the divine is everywhere, but he, she, it seems to get into our lives a lot more easily when we get out there in the midst of everything. You know, sometimes it kind of comes in through a crawl space if you're just sitting at home watching TV, but not so often, and love doesn't either. So the more you're out there in the world, the more that you're falling in love with lots of things. You can fall in love with walking your dog. You can fall in love with all your fabulous, wonderful, amazing women friends. And especially if you get women friends who remind you of the good stuff. I even have one woman friend who every week reminds me to take better care of my husband, because she always tells me how I loved Albert a lot this week. That's her husband. I loved Albert a lot. And I have to think, oh gosh, did I love William a lot? Most weeks I can say, yeah, it was great. And other weeks, you know, I need to do a little bit better. But when you're looking for love, you don't want to be desperately focused on, okay, today I am looking for love, because that kind of desperation kind of scares it away. You just want to be out there in the world having such a delicious life that somebody who wants that kind of life too and is also living it is going to be attracted.
Good one.
Oh, I completely agree, Victoria. And, you know, one of the things, I have a lot of single friends, and I've noticed there's a big difference. There are some of them who just stay home and work, and it's really hard to meet anybody in your own living room while you're sitting there in your sweats, unless I suppose they... maybe a delivery guy, but the odds are much better for those friends who go out. And I live in Colorado. I have a friend who does, you know, she's joined a skiing club. She's joined a hiking club. And she's out there all the time. And she's met some really awesome people, not her soulmate yet, but some awesome people doing that, because that's so basic. You have to be where you can find people.
I love that you're both saying that, because what's coming to me is I'm actually standing up right now. My heart just like wanted to open, and I'm thinking about my own life and a lot of my clients, of just going out and expanding your capacity for love. Like that, I call it the love quotient. And love is everywhere, you know. So like what we're all talking about right now is just friendships and letting women, and you know, as a woman, if you're a woman, like letting other women can be a real in your heart. Deeply into your heart, if intimate relationships can feel really vulnerable. I know it did for me. And as I started opening up my heart and creating really deep, intimate relationships with other women, that's when my guy showed up, because my heart was open enough to receive him. And for so long, I didn't have, I had a lot of friends, but I didn't have truly, deeply, intimate, vulnerable relationships, because I was scared to death that I was going to get hurt. And my heart was protected like Fort Knox. So you can practice opening up your heart and creating intimate, vulnerable relationships with other women. And I think that's a great way to open up your heart to love.
Christine, how did you tear down the walls?
Well, first I had to realize that the walls were there. And the first step for me was loving myself. And second was really getting, and this goes back to my thing around fear, of how protected my heart was because it had been hurt. But I had chosen relationships, like this was my pattern. I had chosen relationships with inconsistent people. So like my former person who I tried to marry was with for 15 years, he was the king of inconsistency. One minute I love you, the next minute I'm taking love from you. And I had a lot of friendships that were like that too. And so I made a promise to myself that, one, I would never settle for less than my heart and soul desired. Two, that I would only have loving relationships in my life. And then I started opening my heart to love. And I will be honest with all of you, when I met Noah, my soulmate, I tried to get rid of him 3 times. I tried to pawn him off on my sister. I tried to come up with all kinds of reasons why we shouldn't be dating. And I got really clear, thank goodness, because I was in therapy and I was going to Unity churches and I was, you know, reading tapes and books and I was on my self-love journey, that I was scared to death of letting love in. And so it was a process, and I'll also be honest that it's a continued process. You know, it's not easy for me. It's much easier than it's ever been to be vulnerable. But I can literally now feel the walls come up around my heart when I get scared, when I like my fear of loneliness or my fear of abandonment comes up. And so what I've done, and this has been in practice with Noah in my relationships and also in my friendships, is instead of choosing fear in the moment and letting my inner mean girl close me down, I say to myself, I choose love and I trust love. And it's been really building that trust muscle over the last 10 years that I can have a level of awareness when I'm shutting it down. So it's a practice, an everyday practice.
Thanks for sharing that. I'd love to hear from all of you about the various ways you add pleasure to your life. Jenny, you want to jump in here?
Yeah, I was just thinking, I started to smile. My chief source of pleasure for much of my life has been dogs, animal companions, because you talk about love and learning to love. We have right now a poodle who's a year old whose name is Milo. And I must be getting better at receiving love because every dog we have seems to me to be more loving than the next. And finally I realized it's just my capacity to receive that love that's changing. And it's such an amazing thing to have an animal companion. It causes me practically bliss. You know, I say, my God, I've turned into a poodophiliac. I just love poodles.
And Joan, you inspire me. We're like a centimeter away from adopting a dog. It's hard in New York City because the walks in the winter are kind of intimidating. But you're very convincing.
Oh, let me tell you, I can feel my whole body shift, Victoria, when I come into the house and there's Milo. And he rubs against me and he looks at me and he engages me with his eyes. And, you know, he's always so beautiful. And you can pat him and pat him and pat him. And he just absorbs more and more and more and more. And he gives it back. I think, you know, that it's a tremendous gift to imagine that there's an entire species on the earth that's devoted to loving human beings.
You know, I have to speak up for cats here.
Yes, I knew you would.
You knew I would, right? I have this big cat named Felix, who every morning when I come into the living room starts talking to me because he knows it's Felix time, which means my job is to lie on the couch. He lies on my chest, and then we stare into each other's eyes and go off into bliss while I'm petting him. So, Victoria, if the dog is too much, you can do the same thing that she does with Milo with a cat.
Cats are fabulous. Yeah.
I think it's their job. I just was at, it's animals' job to teach us how to love because they do it so unconditionally. I was just in a store about a week ago, and my 18-year-old dog just left the planet. She just transitioned right around Easter, and she was my heart opener. To go back to the question that you asked, Ariel, about how have I opened my heart? I spent a lot of time with my dog, and I think the reason why we trust them is because it's safe. Right? It's safe. We know that they're not going to hurt us. They're so safe. And this poster that I read, it said something like, animals come into our life for a short time to teach us how to love because that's their job and it's also our job too.
And well, I love what Sark always calls them angels in fur coats.
Yeah.
I think there's some love attraction going on even with the dogs, Joan, when you said that your dogs get more loving. You know, maybe that's what you're attracting. And one of the things that I like to tell single people is, do you have the qualities that you want in a partner? And I've seen this happen so clearly in people, one woman in particular, lovely Broadway singer, but single, and relationships just weren't working out. And she knew what she wanted in the guy. She had the list of he needs to be healthy and fit, and he needs to have a great sense of humor, and he needs to be financially secure. And then she looked at her own life, and she didn't have all that stuff herself. So she devoted an entire year to developing the qualities that she wanted in the guy. Lo and behold, they were both cast in Ragtime, found each other, and they've been together for 8 years. So the wonderful Mr. Rightness maybe needs to be Ms. Right first.
Yes, I totally agree. Joan, I know you have to leave us in a couple of moments, and I want you to share with everybody before you do go, Joan's speaking today in Chicago. What are you most excited about right now, and how can people find you?
Oh, okay. Well, I'm extremely excited about something. How can you say you're excited about fried? But I think that so many of us are burned out in this society. And, you know, I come from a healthcare background. I'm a clinical psychologist. I've taught at a medical school. I've run a clinic. And I do a lot of events for people in healthcare. And I'm excited because Gordy, my husband and soulmate, and I have been working on this program called Soul Care in Healthcare. And it was a 6-month program last year, which we held at the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck. And we decided this year we wanted to make it more available to people because 6 months is long in this culture. So we're doing a 5-day program at Omega. But we're starting to expand that. I'm working with a great guy, Lee McCormick. We're going to be giving a program for soul care and recovery for people who work with others in recovery. And I think we look at our healthcare system and we look at the failures in it. And what we don't realize is that all the failures and difficulties put such a tax on the heart of those people who are healthcare providers. And so It's my calling right now that I want to help them to recover from burnout, to take care of themselves, because truly the relationship, the capacity to be present to your client or your patient, that's where the transformation occurs. The relationship itself is the medicine. So I'm totally excited about that work in soul care that I've been doing, and Gordy has been doing right along with me. And that right now is my main thing. And the other thing I'm excited about is not my work at all. It's simply life. And you know, Ariel, we had a huge fire on Labor Day in Boulder, the Four Mile Canyon wildfire. And our home was at the epicenter of it and partly burned. And, you know, the trees are just decimated. And so many of our neighbors don't live there anymore. Their houses have been burned out. And I'm passionate about aligning with nature, watching how it recovers, helping it to recover, actually looking what are the weeds that come up after the fire that need to be pulled? Where are the places where a tree could be replanted? And it's strange how something so devastating as burnout, whether it's from a real fire or from whether it's overwork, can actually show you something you never would have imagined, something so deep about appreciation, about seeing harmony, about seeing beauty. And so I would say that's what my passion is seeing harmony, seeing beauty, restoring things where they're burned out. And it's a great time of life for me. I feel a kind of deep contentment that I've actually never felt before. And I never expected that to happen in the wake of a fire, which created so much grief to begin with. And I just want to leave your listeners with a sense that, you know, wherever there's grief in your life or loss in your life or difficulty or trouble opening your heart, that's always, absolutely always, the next available portal to get into the depths of yourself in a way that you discover the tremendous, infinite creativity and beauty that you are.
Before you go, Joan, what's the best website for people to access you at?
I always forget that part. Good thing you remember.
You know me, that's my job.
Gosh, well, thank you, because that I need you around, Ariel, to do that. You have to learn to spell my name to find my website, because it is my name, Joan Borisenko. It's BorySenko.com. And then, for me, what the most fun is to be on Facebook.
So, Victoria, tell me how you add more pleasure to your life besides maybe getting a dog.
Well, I just love what I do. And when my head is in the right place, my entire life is an exquisite pleasure. And there are times that the black pall can start to encroach. And those times I have to remember all the stuff that I write about, all the stuff you guys write about that I read, and the things that I hear from positive people around me. Because as long as I'm in that groove of keeping my attitude where it needs to be, then there is truly, and I know it can sound corny and hokey, but absolutely everything is delicious and delightful. Getting up and meditating is fabulous. Making breakfast is utterly delightful and delicious, even when it's green juice. And my husband says, I love everything about you, but that green stuff you drink in the morning, that is pleasurable too. When I love myself and I love my life and I'm on target, nothing is icky. I can even tolerate the dentist.
Oh, good. And what about you, Christine? Where do you find pleasure?
I really find pleasure in connection. Connection is really important to me. And so that could be connection to myself. That could be connection to nature. That could be connection to people I love. That could be connection to spirit. For me, whenever I'm connecting, that fear of loneliness or that sense of, you know, being the one that has to get everything done, it just kind of disappears. So I do things like I'm actually up writing my second book, Madly in Love with Me, The Daring Adventure to Becoming Your Own Best Friend, right now. And I go for a walk every day around 5 o'clock in the vineyards. And I just like connect with these vineyards and the vines and the trees and the birds. And I come back so open and so refreshed, and I feel so connected to spirit. And I also really enjoy connecting with my friends. So I make sure that I have fun time, because if I don't get to have fun, my inner fairy, she gets really pissed off and she gets really mad. She gets really cranky and she's like, enough with the work already. I want to have fun. So yesterday we put hats on and we just went, you know, I stopped writing at 4 o'clock and we went to a winery and then just hung out and talked and connected. So I think that connection really helps me continue to open my heart and be happy and have fun. You know, I think sometimes as a recovering achievement junkie, and for those of us that, you know, have great things we want to get done in the world, we can often take ourselves too seriously. So I like to lighten up.
Yeah, fun is actually my number one priority in life. So everything I do, I turn into fun. I make a game out of it. And even when I'm writing a book, which as challenging as that can be, you know, it may be, okay, today I'm going to write 500 words. And as soon as I write 500 words, then I'm going to go, go for a walk. Or there's a dog. We don't have a dog, but there's a dog in the neighborhood that I'm in love with named Cooper. You know, I'm going to go bring Cooper some treats. He runs the Bird Rock Surf Shop around the corner from us. So I just try to turn everything into fun or a game, and that's how I get pleasure. Both of you are happily married to your soulmates, and I would love for you to share some of the things that you love best about getting to share your life with your beloved.
Well, that's such a sweet question. I think for me, the best thing is this man loves me so much. And one of the things that I know I'm supposed to learn in this life is really how to appreciate men. I was an only child, and my dad was great, but he was very busy, and so there were just little bits of him here and there. And I wasn't a tomboy kind of little girl, so I didn't hang out with boys. So now in adulthood, I'm really getting to see the beautiful vulnerability. That old song, when a man loves a woman, and then, you know, he'll do just about anything. I just see that in my husband. So I love him, and I am overjoyed by how much he loves me. I also love that he accepts me absolutely to the max. Philosophically, he claims to be an atheist, and I am one of these, oh, it's a God thing, it's a God thing, it's so great, it's a God thing, God is everywhere, God is in us, blah, blah, blah. I don't know how he stands me, but he does. About a year ago, wonderful man from Houston with the great big giant church?
Oh, Joel Osteen.
Him, yeah. He was at Yankee Stadium, and a friend got tickets, and we were going to go. And then I realized William had to go out of town on business for an extended period the next day. And I said, I can totally cancel this thing so we can go out. And he said, no, you really need to go. And I said, that is just so generous of you, knowing what you think about just spirituality in general, not to mention, you know, religion. He said, oh, it's not that I don't hope that religious people are right. And he tells me sometimes how he loves being around me because I bring this other thing into him that he's not buying, but he's happy to have the exposure. So just that kind of acceptance makes me so happy. Plus, my husband is creative. He wrote The Complete Idiot's Guide to Playing the Harmonica and learned the story of this lovely man who was the biggest star of the Grand Ole Opry in the 20s and 30s, fired in 1942 when the Opry went national for being black, and he opened a shoeshine parlor after that. Well, William has turned this man's story into a stage musical. And we're going out into the world looking for investors and this and that for The Color of Music. And I'm so excited to be part of his creativity. So I'm going to stop because I could go on forever.
Oh, well, you know what? Victoria, offline, we need to talk more about that because we actually have a friend who was the guy who was the money behind Jersey Boys.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. We'll talk about that later.
Fabulous.
So, Christine, what do you love about spending your life with your soulmate?
It is such a yummy question. Just asking the question makes my heart open so wide. I am really fortunate that I married walking love, and Noah has taught me how to love and let myself be loved. It's a constant everyday ability for me, or an experience for me. So I love being with my soulmate because it allows me to experience more love, both in our relationship, but also in all my relationships. And so there's just something about being with that person that you can really trust, that you know loves you unconditionally. In fact, loves me for my complicated self, and loves the you know, that's what I think when you really know you're with your soulmate. When even those things that, you know, drive you crazy about yourself, when they can look at you and laugh at you. And, you know, sometimes I'll get very excited about what I'm doing and very passionate, and Noah will just start laughing at me. And it's not that he's laughing at me in a mean way. He's laughing at me because he just adores me in that way. And that was one of my core fours, the four things I really wanted to bring into my life. I wanted someone who loved me so much that they would be daring enough to stand on a rooftop and sing I Love Christine. And he actually does that. We will walk down the street, and like in Oakland and San Francisco, and he's singing, oh, I love Christine. And I'm like, oh, my God, oh, my God, I'm so embarrassed. But I'm like, oh, my God, I love it, I love it, I love it, I love it. And so he just allows me to be a better person. And I think that's when you know you really found your soul partner, is that you become a better person because that person's in your life. And Noah and I are partners in our lives. We're also, you know, we teach love together. We actually, one of our stakes and hopes for the world is that we can just share our relationship and what we've been able and how we've been able to create love, even through the fighting, you know, that we have in a couple, that we are always in love and in respect with each other and just sharing that. So my life has just gotten so much better. And I think when you do find that soulmate and that soul partner, it allows your heart to open so you can also do your great work in the world. And I really do believe that the reason I can teach self-love and I can do all the great things that I get to do is because I have such a supportive and loving partner in which love is always present.
Yeah, I love that. I always call Brian my heart chakra with legs because he's like Noah. He's just all about love. He actually believes his reason for being alive on the planet is to first take care of me and second to make sure that everyone who comes in contact with him has the experience of being loved. So I can totally relate. So we're almost out of time here, but before we end, I would love for both of you to share any final tips or ways on how to make love a priority in your life right now.
Mm. I like knowing that love is a verb. It's one thing to just sit around and think, yeah, like, okay, I love my husband, I love my daughter, I love stuff. But to really act like that's the truth. One of my guilty pleasures is to TiVo Dr. Phil, and he often says that he asks first thing in the morning, what can I do today to make my wife's life better? And I've actually started doing that. You know, sometimes even out of a guilty pleasure, you can get something good. And I really want, just today, with what's left of this day, when our call has ended, my priority is going to be not the book deadline, even though it's coming up, and not all these other things that make themselves say, me, me, I'm the most important thing. You know what? Today, how about this person who has volunteered to spend his entire life with me? That's a priority.
Mm-hmm. Christine, what about for our singles out there? How can they make love a priority?
Really simply is to start with the love for yourself. And I really believe that self-love is a daily practice. It's something that you get to do. It's not something that you put on your to-do list. But to really, really, really make self-love a priority. And I don't even, you know, just sort of like the word priority. I like the word choice. Like just really in any moment you can ask yourself, am I choosing love? Or am I putting love off? I think as singles especially, we can get to that place where it's like, oh, well, I'll have that, like you were saying, Ariel, when you were waiting to get the good towel. Right? It's like, well, you know, until you got married. And it's like the same thing. We put having love off, and there's no reason to put having love off. And so for those of you that are single and, you know, do want to attract and find and keep a soulmate, practice love now and start that love with yourself. You can use the self-love soak like I mentioned. I have a free self-love kit if you go to chooseselflove.com that has all kinds of daring, zany things that you can do to create more self-love inside of yourself. And stop waiting for love. Like, just become a love generator. And whether that's loving your puppy or that's, you know, loving your kitty or that's loving the barista or that's bringing more great friends in your life, start in this moment realizing that you have the power to generate love inside of your own heart. And the more that you...
I was going to say, the one thing I like to do every day is every time I walk past a mirror, I blow myself a kiss.
Exactly. You are a woman who knows how to love herself. I love that. And let's just own that. I think, you know, as women, especially we're I don't love myself. You know, in fact, the definition of self-love on dictionary.com for self-love is vanity, conceit, and narcissism. So
yeah.
There's some.
We got to change that.
We do. Let's take that back right now.
Thank you guys so much. This was fun and enlightening and insightful and full of juicy tips. And I'm very, very grateful that you made time to play with me today. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Ariel, for inviting us. It's so
okay.
Important.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye, ladies.